For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hey folks, so congratulations to the Golden State, not the Celtics, on winning the NBA championship. We are now officially right smack dab in the eye of the NBA offseason storm. And if you're looking for some comprehensive Lakers / NBA free agency coverage, well, you've come to the right podcast place. If you haven't yet checked it out, make sure to catch our free agency mega deep dive with Hoops Hype salary cap expert Yazi Goslin in episode number 420, Lowering the Bargain, for all of your off-season minutia needs. After that, make sure to also tap into number 418, Stranger Wings, where Alan and I look at 9 cheap, under-the-radar dark horse wings the Lakers should target. Number 417, Maximize the Minimum, where Tommy and I rank our top veteran minimum targets position by position. Number 415, Mid-Market, where Tommy and I rank our top mid-level targets by position. Number 414, Wing-Lose Situation, where Tommy and I scan the barren wing market and talk about some THT trades for wings instead. And then lastly, number 413, Market Canvassing, where Tommy and I take a more macro look at the front office and outline what we hope they'll change philosophy-wise in order to come out of this offseason with a much more competent and intuitive roster. So that's 6 different podcast episodes covering different aspects of the offseason and free agency. I don't think you'll find a more comprehensive and deep cutty free agency outlook elsewhere. I mean, my God, we were talking about Abdel Nader, Zaire Smith, and Bruno Caboclo. So anyways, if you appreciate all of the free agency content we've been pumping out this offseason, we would also please like to ask you to take a moment to rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. It truly helps out a lot. And most importantly, it lets us know that this type of content is insightful and informative, and that we should keep producing this content on a consistent basis. But yeah, with that said, thank you guys for listening. Thanks for your support. And now, on with the showtime. All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where first round is the worst, second round is the best, and undrafted free agents are the Lakers treasure chests. Or at least that's what the Lakers are banking on once again heading into the 2022 draft, because they don't got a first round pick or a second round pick. Their first round pick is going to the Pelicans at number 8. Womp womp. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Tommy Alexander and Alan Riley. Tommy, are you ready for the 2022 NBA draft?
Yeah!
Alan, are you ready to go buck wild on the undrafted free agency market?
Woo! Bow, 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 bow!
Hell yeah. Juzang Sanity, here we come. Okay, so this is going to be a quick micro pod on the NBA draft and the Lakers' position, maybe getting a second round pick, probably signing some undrafted free agency guys to play in their summer league and into training camp. But for obvious reasons, we're not going to delve too deeply into the draft like we usually do. But some quick points of note about this draft. Only 58 players are being drafted because picks number 54 and 55 have been forfeited due to tampering. I believe those are the Bucks and the Heat picks. So technically, you could say the Lakers have the 59th and 60th pick because only 58 players are getting picked. And then with regards to the prospects in this draft, at least for me personally, seems more backloaded in the second round into undrafted free agency with a bunch of guys who are 6'6 plus with 7 foot wingspans, more so than I can remember in recent history, which obviously benefits the Lakers, who sorely need any lanky wings with athleticism they can find. Now, maybe it's loaded with a lot of these dudes in the second round to undrafted free agency because they're all bad, or they're all middling Sekou Doumbouya types, but at the very least, you won't be short of physical clay to mold with, and some of these guys actually have some shooting and skill mixed in there as well. Tommy, do you have any quick macro thoughts on the second round to undrafted free agency class of this draft, and are you glad the Lakers seem to be going full force into really, really excavating the second round and the UDFA class this year, and I feel like they've almost been too overcompensating and vocal about it. A lot of that due to probably optics and being extra vocal out of embarrassment and necessity after throwing picks away the last few years and not giving the best part of their organization, i.e. the scouts, the best tools to help uplift the team. But they've seemingly brought around 6 prospects to work out every day, 5 of whom are typically not even ranked in the second round. So it's clear they are leaving no stone unturned. So yeah, your quick thoughts on one of the most active drafts the Lakers have been a part of despite not actually having a pick yet.
Yeah, it's interesting because although we've had the change, you know, with the coach and some anticipated roster changes are coming up. The people making these decisions are the same people that have been around for like the last 3 years. So it's sort of interesting. Like you would have expected this sort of maybe not outward showmanship and, you know, talking about it so much, but you would have expected this result to happen last year. You know, it's like we made the big home run trade for Russ. Our roster was completely depleted. I mean, it was like we were literally back in like Anthony Davis trade time land, where it was like we had 3 guys essentially on the team, a few, you know, stragglers like THT and whatever. But we needed to build a completely new team from the ground up, and they didn't do anything. I mean, like they ended up getting Austin Reeves as an undrafted guy, and they gave him like the 15th guaranteed or 14th guaranteed contract right before training camp last year. But you know, we sat around texting each other throughout the entire draft last year, and we saw guys who seemed like they could have been helpful can fly off the board, and it just didn't really seem like, you know, that they were thinking this way. And so, you know, to your point, it does seem like, at least outwardly, there's been a very strong overcorrection on that front this year. So in terms of, you know, I guess whether I'm excited or what I'm expecting, I don't really know, because this front office has shown multiple times that they're not necessarily going to do what they say. You know, throughout the whole season last year, athletic wing depth was a just glaring need from the moment we tipped off in the preseason. And then you had Trevor Ariza, who's 97 years old, get injured in the preseason and, you know, seemed to be out for a significant amount of time. And still no effort was made to address it. And then finally, it's like we signed Stanley Johnson off the street and he ends up being like one of our best players, like to close out the second half of the season. So, you know, maybe not best, but certainly like impactful, at least on the defensive end. So, you know, it's nice to say all this stuff, but the question is, are they going to actually seek to address this sort of thing? And then I guess my second sort of fear is, even to the extent they do address this issue, building for the future is great. But is the intention that we're hoping to draft guys or pick up undrafted guys who are going to help us like this year or like in a playoff run? Because Austin Reeves was, everyone can point to him and that was a great find. And he actually was one of our best players last year. But like, what are the chances you do that 2 years in a row? Right. And, you know, for every Austin Reeves, you get like, a THT or, you know, I'm trying to think of,
Sekou Doumbouya.
Not to say
THT is a bad
Anthony
example.
Brown.
Well, no, I just in the sense, not in the sense that these are bad prospects, but like maybe solid, actually really solid prospects
not
for the
ready
second
for
round.
Playoff basketball.
Guys who are not ready to play, you know, THT as a rookie was not ready to play in the NBA playoffs. So,
sure.
So that's why I'm sort of hedging my excitement until we actually see what happens, I guess.
Yeah, I know. That's fair. Alan, I had you look at some prospects. Were you surprised that a majority of them were all guys who are like 6'7" and had length, and they were all pretty much considered, they could be undrafted, they could be second round. So what are your thoughts on, hey, this seems like an interesting class in the sense that typically those types of players are hard to come by anywhere, whether it's NBA free agency, whether it's the draft or whatever, but we're sort of in this weird spot where we may not have a pick, but we may get a guy with size.
Yeah, the list of guys that you sent me, these prospects, are super versatile, right? And I think that they meet a lot of the needs that we have. It's everything that Tommy just talked about having athletic wings, right? So the fact that they check a lot of the boxes, at least at the college level, right, of being able to knock down a wide open 3-point shot, just a catch and shoot. We're not even asking you to do anything crazy. Stand in the corner, hit it, right? Defensively, just stay in front of your man, right? And the fact that a lot of the guys that, you know, we've kind of looked at recently, they can, you know, switch, right? They are these like 6'6", 6'7" guys. They could guard, you know, smaller guards. They can guard bigger guys as well. So knowing that some of them might not even get drafted and then they get invited to training camps later on, to try to find a spot somewhere, I think that there is a lot of talent out there. There's a lot of depth.
There's an opportunity for the Lakers to capitalize, and like Tommy said, we hope they capitalize. All right, so let's talk about the Lakers aggressively trying to buy slash trade for a second round pick. It's been much publicized, and it's weird that they've done it so vocally before the draft. Usually we just hear about it during the night of the draft, right? But it's like they've been saying that they've wanted a second round pick, you know, for like the last 3 weeks or so. Now, the Lakers have $4.7 million to use in that venture, and they can also trade one of their 2023 second-rounders, of which they have two, to get a pick this year. THT, for reference, was bought from Orlando for $2.2 million, and the Lakers also traded their 2020 second-round pick. That pick was eventually traded to Philly, and Philly drafted Paul Reed with the Lakers' number 58th pick in 2020. So if the Lakers trade one of their 2023 second-round picks plus $4.7 million, or maybe even half of that, I think they'll be able to buy into the second round because some teams have roster crunches that they have to account for. Some of these tank teams have been accumulating picks and picks and picks, and now they're like, what the heck do we do? There's only 15 roster spots. So we're going to play a quick game of, here are the teams with multiple picks, and I'm going to have Alan and Tommy just decide and guesstimate which pick from which team the Lakers will trade for. So here are the teams with multiple picks in this year's draft. The Charlotte Hornets have number 13, number 15, and number 45. Number 45 obviously being the pick worth mentioning as far as the Lakers are concerned. Minnesota has picks number 19, number 40, number 48, number 50. They have four picks, three in the second round. OKC, they have number 2, number 12, number 34. They also had pick number 30, but they traded that to the Denver Nuggets for JaMychal Green. Now, Pelinka obviously has some history trading with the OKC Thunder. He traded Danny Green and a first-round pick for Dennis Schroeder.
That's actually less picks than I thought it would.
That's what I thought too, dude. I thought this would be a laundry list.
It is coming the next few years for sure still. Cleveland has number 14, number 39, number 58. Now that 58th pick could be considered number 56 because we forfeited two picks, so keep that in mind. Pelinka also has a history of trading with the Cavs and Kobe Altman. Indiana has number 6, number 31, and number 60. Number 60 is like getting the 58th pick. Golden State has number 28, number 51, number 57. Golden State, as you know, they already have Wiseman, Moody, and Kuminga to worry about, so I really don't know if they need those second rounders or even their first rounder, to be honest. Orlando, number 1, number 32, and number 35. Pelinka also has a history of trading with Orlando. They got THT with Orlando's pick in 2019. Sacramento, number 4, number 37, number 49. And then lastly, the Portland Trailblazers have number 7, number 36, and number 59. Jake L. Fisher has also reported that the Atlanta Hawks, who have the 44th pick, and the Detroit Pistons, who have the 46th pick, have been rumored to be willing to make those picks available to anybody that's interested. So the Lakers could definitely look at maybe those picks in the second round. 44 and 46 from Atlanta and the Pistons. So, Tommy, let's start with you. There's no deep analysis to this, but give me your best guess on which team we're trading with and what specific pick we're getting.
I think we're going to trade with Minnesota. They have 3 second rounders, if I heard you correctly.
Mm-hmm. 40, 48, and 50.
And I think maybe 48, or I guess maybe 50. I think 48 makes more sense. I feel like you tend to see people buy in, not necessarily, like in that 30, like late 30s to late 40s-ish range, maybe, because early second, especially in a draft like this, is essentially a first, right? So there's pretty good depth happening. And then once you start getting to like the mid to late 50s, it's like, okay, I guess you could maybe try to get one of these guys as a undrafted free agent instead of spending the cash. So that would be my guess.
Okay, so number 48 or 50 for Minnesota. Alan, what about you?
I mean, that was the exact same logic that I had, right? Like, so if you're playing along at home and you're like hoping for certain things to unfold, yeah, anything in the early 30s is like, that just doesn't make sense for some team to trade that away. And then like Tommy just said, at some point you just realize like, okay, we probably don't even have to waste a draft pick on this particular player that we're eyeing. We'll just invite them after the fact. So anything in that like 40s-ish range. And then of course, teams who have crap ton of picks. I mean, I guess Golden State, like you mentioned with Kuminga and Wiseman, they got some young guys. So why would they, you know, use their late second round picks? But sorry, can you remind me of what Golden State second round picks are again?
51 and 57.
Nah, see, it's like so late though. Like, why would we even want to trade for that? So yeah, I don't have a specific team or number the way Tommy did. I think his sounds great. I'm going to piggyback off of him and we can bet on it together.
Okay, Tommy, give me a specific pick then, 48 or 50 with Minnesota, and we will hold you to it.
48.
Okay, there you go.
If cool, you get I go wrong, 50 because podcast. Of Robert Sacre.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so for me, I'm going to take a risk here, and I have my sights set on us nabbing number 39 from Cleveland, which would be out of the ordinary because typically, like you guys mentioned, we get someone in the range of 40 to 48, right? But I say number 39 from Cleveland because Cleveland has a very apparent and glaring roster crunch that they have to account for. And they also have to take into account Sexton's upcoming new deal. So they can't have three new players. Now, they could obviously draft an overseas player or whatnot. But I think given Pelinka's history working with Kobe Altman on deals before, I'd say Pelinka will try and shoot for the stars, especially because he has such a huge lump sum of cash in $4.7 million and can still give Cleveland a future second rounder in 2023. So I'm going with Cleveland, number 39. All right, with that said, let's take it to break. And when we return, we will just touch on any prospects in the second round to undrafted free agency that have piqued our interest. So we will catch you guys after the turn. Hey guys, Jonathan here. So we're going to try out something a little bit new for our episodes, and I'm coming to you now with a mini halftime segment where we will go over one of your guys' fantasy roster builds this free agency season. If you'd like to get in on the fun and have us assess or rate your ideal free agency roster build for the Lakers this summer, then shoot us your 7-man roster build, 7 being about the number of open roster spots the Lakers will have to fill out this offseason, give or take. So send us your 7-man roster build with one mini MLE candidate and 6 veteran minimum candidates via a 5-star Apple Podcast rating and review. And it's as simple as that. So today, before we get back to Tommy and Alan, we are going to quickly go over one of our listeners' submissions. And today's submission comes from Matt, at ZenBoyLakerFan on Twitter, longtime LLP supporter. So Matt sends us his 5-star review and says, always enjoyable to hear from one of my go-tos. So yeah, short and sweet. Thank you, Matt, for the review. Now, for Matt's free agency plan for the Lakers this summer, he did a little more than fill out the 7 roster spots rubric that I laid out, but that's okay. I'll try and streamline through his plan anyways. I'll outline all of his transactions first and then give my overall thoughts afterwards. So first, Matt has the Lakers trading Russell Westbrook for Evan Fournier and Julius Randle of the Knicks. Fournier's on for 2 more years at $18 million per, with a club option in 2024-25, and Julius Randle is on for 4 more years at around $23 million, $25, $27, and $29 million his last year, which is a player option for the 2025-26 season that I think he'll exercise. So Matt has that trade unfolding first. Next, Matt has the Lakers also trading Talen Horton-Tucker for Kelly Olynyk straight up. So Olenek is on for this next year and then has a partial guarantee of just $3 million on his $12 million contract during the 2023-24 season. So we've got the Russell Westbrook trade for Evan Fournier and Julius Randle, and then we have a THT trade for Kelly Olenek straight up. As for Matt's free agency roster build, here's how he lined that up. For the mini MLE, the taxpayer mid-level, he has us signing Kyle Anderson. Then he has us signing Josh Jackson as his first veteran minimum guy. Danny Green, although Danny Green has a torn ACL, in Matt's situation, he has Danny Green being cut by Philly because he's on a non-guaranteed $10 million contract. So mini MLE, Kyle Anderson, the veteran minimums go Josh Jackson, Danny Green, PJ Dozier, DeMarcus Cousins, Raul Neto, Javon Carter, and Wes Matthews. Okay, so first off, I think we have one too many free agents here. It should be 7 slots total, 1 mini MLE player and 6 veteran minimums. So as it stands, Matt, your full roster with these new acquisitions and signings, the Lakers currently have 16 players. So to make things easier, let's just take Danny Green out of here because he does have a torn ACL and probably won't be playing till 2023, if that. But anyways, here are my quick thoughts on this free agency roster build. First off, with the Russ for Randle and Fournier trade, it's great that we're not giving up any picks in your scenario, but I personally really do not like the thought of Randle on this team. To me, he's just the power forward version of Russell Westbrook, and I don't think there's a situation where he'll be able to thrive next to LeBron James or Anthony Davis. You mentioned him maybe coming off the bench, but to me, that's a non-negotiable. Try convincing a dude in the smack dab of his prime who's making $25 million that he should just come off the bench and play defense without the ball in his hands. So I don't really like taking on Randle here. If we can instead swap Randle for Alec Burks and Nerlens Noel or whoever else New York wants to get rid of, I think that would be the better option in my opinion, because taking on Randle is creating a potentially new problem that the Lakers will have to wrestle with till potentially 2026, and I don't want to have to go through that. Now, you could say that it's probably easier trading Randle, and if we do need to find a trade partner, it's probably a lot easier to do that than Russell Westbrook, but I have my doubts. So, not really feeling the Randle trade. Next, the THT for Kelly Olynyk deal. Now, I don't hate this deal, and it's actually a deal that I proposed to Tommy in a previous episode. And I think in that episode, we also asked for some young capital coming back to us. I think it was Hamadou Diallo in that case. So while I like Kelly Olynyk, I think I'd revise your deal slightly to at least get a Hamadou Diallo or multiple second rounders back. Because while Olynyk is a great fit in Darvin Ham's 4-out-1-in system next to AD, I think we are still selling very low on THT. So hopefully if we do make this deal, we can recoup some assets as well. Now, with regards to your free agent signings, for the mini MLE, you have us signing Kyle Anderson. That's solid. I like it. Very smart player with length. Though, I think I try and aim for someone with a little bit more athletic upside, but I don't dislike this signing. I also think it might be moot, though, because I think Kyle Anderson's going to earn more than the taxpayer mid-level. But overall, I like the signing of Kyle Anderson. For your next veteran minimum signing, you have Josh Jackson, which I get this signing. I like his length and athleticism, 6'8", 6'11", wingspan. I do think there are smarter wing gambles to sign instead, though, like a Yuta Watanabe or a Josh Okogie, Troy Brown Jr., or even a Juancho Hernan Gomez. But maybe Darvin Ham can finally unlock Josh Jackson because he's a very strong player who has a pretty good motor when he's engaged. So I get it, but I would hope for maybe a smarter gamble. Free agent number 2 for the veteran minimum, you have Danny Green. Again, we don't need to be signing Danny Green at all to waste a roster spot. He won't be ready till 2023, and by that point, he'll at best be a buyout market, last-minute playoff run addition sort of guy. So let's not even think about Danny Green. Your next veteran minimum signing, PJ Dozier. Love this signing. You've clearly been listening to our podcast because Dozier is a dark horse wing that we sort of helped bring back into the Lakers' zeitgeist and consciousness this offseason, and I think he'd be a great gamble if he's healthy. Next veteran minimum signing, you have DeMarcus Cousins. I love this signing as well. He has experience playing with Darvin Ham during his stint with the Bucks last year. He would fit perfectly in Darvin Ham's 4-out-1-in system. And DeMarcus Cousins has also done the Twin Towers thing with AD as well in New Orleans, and obviously has experience with the Lakers organization, so I like the DeMarcus Cousins signing if he can hold up. Next veteran minimum signing, you have Raul Neto. So, he's a solid backup point guard, but I'm a bit lukewarm on this one. I think I would rather take a younger, higher upside flyer than Raul Neto. This is where I'd put like a Dante Exum, Josh Okogie, or Troy Brown Jr. Your next veteran minimum signing is Javon Carter. Love it. He has experience with Darvin Ham. Great point of attack defender. Still pretty young. And then lastly, your last veteran minimum signing is former Laker Wes Matthews. Love it if he's willing to come back to the Lakers and experience a reunion with this organization. He obviously has experience with Darvin Ham. Clearly still has a lot of defensive grit left in the tank. So yeah, let's get a Wes Matthews times Lakers redemption story. So yeah, those are my off-the-cuff thoughts on Matt's free agency roster build. It's a solid roster overall, and I can see your line of thinking, Matt. I would just personally stray away from the Julius Randle trade and maybe try to upgrade that Raul Neto and Josh Jackson spot. But otherwise, that's a roster I could roll with this upcoming season. All right, so I hope you guys enjoyed that short halftime Lakers fantasy GM segment. If you want me to review your roster, again, please send us your 7-man roster build. That's one mini MLE spot and 6 veteran minimum spots, and send it via a 5-star rating and review on the Apple Podcast app. And I will assess your roster just like I did this one in a future segment or episode. So yeah, with that said, let's get back to Tommy and Alan, where we shall talk about some actual NBA draft prospects who we have our eyes set on. All right, so we're back. Tommy, are there any prospects that you've been eyeing in this draft for the Lakers to maybe nab with the number 39th pick, the number 48th pick, or even just undrafted free agency? And we don't have to go too deeply into these player profiles and whatnot. So give me like 2 names that have intrigued you.
Yeah, you guys have probably done a lot more scouting of these guys than I have. So most of my, I guess, quote unquote scouting was just watching the, you know, tournament this past year. But the 2 guys that really over the last, or certainly this past tournament impressed me and over the last couple seasons are the UCLA guys, Bernard and Johnny Juzang. Mm-hmm. First of all, I love saying the name Johnny Juzang. So that's like a huge factor. And I would love to continue to say that name. So I'm kind of rooting for him. I know these guys are, at least I don't actually know where Bernard is slated, but I know Juzang is kind of trending towards undrafted. Mm-hmm. But certainly last year, and I know the UCLA team was sort of dealing with a lot of injuries and COVID related issues and whatnot this year, but last year in the tournament, Johnny Juzang was just like a complete beast. And he wasn't bad this year. It's just like I mentioned, they were having some other issues. And I guess like the one thing that really stood out to me is in these games that mattered the most, particularly last year, he never shied away from the pressure. And he's had like multiple years now of, you know, time. I forget their coach's name, Alan. You probably know him, the head coach's name.
Mick Cronin.
Yeah, under Cronin, to just like really, really become a strong defender. I mean, that defense that UCLA has been playing the last couple seasons has just been insane. So I kind of trust him a little bit defensively, and offense, you know, any player needs to kind of adjust to the NBA, but the skill set that he showed last year in the tournament, I mean, eventually he'll get there. So I really like him as a long-term prospect, but that's just based on, you know, not based on measurements, not based on combine, not based on any of that sort of stuff, just based on sort of the eye test, I guess.
No, I mean, I like Johnny Juzang too. I like your point about him coming up.
About being able to say his name.
No, not that one. That part. I mean, that's just like cherry on top of the sundae and the fact that he's half Vietnamese. But no, he is a bucket. He has a very, very nice jump shot. It's pretty much textbook form. It's just about, can he shoot at a high efficiency? Can he get good shots, et cetera, et cetera. But I think for both Juzang and Bernard, they have very fluid offensive games. And if you watch Jules Bernard, he's almost like D'Angelo Russell-esque in the way that he snakes in the lane. And I know it's like low-hanging fruit that they're both left-handed, but really, their games are pretty similar. He doesn't have like the, you know, snazzy passing skills that D'Angelo does, but in terms of like pull up mid-range jump shot or hitting a 3 under the screen or whatever, I feel like a lot of those traits Jules Bernard shares with D'Angelo Russell, I think for the both of them, it's going to be, can they do they have the strength to hold up in the NBA? Because I think as isolation scorers, I think Jules Bernard is more crafty and Johnny Juzang is more of a, I think what he's going to become in the NBA is more like a Bryn Forbes, maybe like a Joe Harris type guy, unless he can get his handles together, gain more separation. I think one of his biggest problems was he dribbled the ball a lot, but not really be able to get separation against his man. I think that's only going to be more exposed in the NBA. So unless he can really strengthen up or whatever, I see him more as a shooting specialist, whereas Jules Bernard has nice size. I think they're both like 6'5", 6'6", right? So they have good size. It's about can they fill out their frame. But yeah, I like both of them. Now, Alan, I had you look at a couple prospects. I'll lay out their templates really quickly, and then you can just talk about them in conjunction or even just single out a particular player. I had you look at Vince Williams Jr. out of VCU. He's 21 years old, 6'6" with a 7-foot wingspan, 14 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 39% from 3-point land, 2.2 threes made per game, 1.6 steals, 1.1 blocks. To me, he kind of looked like a taller Stanley Johnson with a 3-point shot. He's left-handed, though. But yeah, really solid guy. And then we've got Keon Ellis, a particular prospect that a lot of Lakers Nation has been sort of high about. He's 6'5", although without shoes, he's like 6'3", and he measured out with a 6'9" wingspan, so kind of shorter than people expected when he measured out in the combine. But still, 12 points, 6 rebounds, 2 steals, 36% from 3, hitting 2 a game, 88% from the stripe. Versatile movement shooter, but his thing is he's a tremendous defender, all SEC defender, good in transition and finishing. Kind of describe him as like a taller Patrick Beverly, very scrappy defender, pretty athletic, and again, can shoot the three ball. And then Justin Lewis from Marquette, 6'7" with a 7'2" wingspan, 17 points, 8 rebounds, 1.7 assists, 1.8 threes made per game. He's a chonky dude who's pretty thick with two C's. But in spite of that, he can really handle the ball, can drive it into the lane, can hit the three-point shot. I describe him as like Julius Randle plus Grant Williams. Or if you fuse THT with Randle and gave him a three-point shot, you maybe get Justin Lewis. But yeah, Alan, out of Vince Williams Jr., Keon Ellis, and Justin Lewis, what do you have to say about those trio? And did anyone in particular stand out?
Yeah, no, that was a really good summary of what each of the guys, you know, brings to the table. I'm pretty high on Vince Williams Jr. I think his catch and shoot threes really stand out to me. It's really consistent, like mechanics. Never looks rushed or anything like that, and he could shoot from NBA range. A lot of his shots were well beyond the college 3-point line, and it doesn't look like it's requiring much effort because he's got a lot of strength. He can also, you know, shoot off the dribble and like kind of create for himself. I've seen a few like step back 3-pointers as well. Mm-hmm. So again, that alludes, I think, like the strength that he possesses. Defensively, he's pretty impressive too. I think that he has good instincts, plays passing lanes really well, just gets his hand in there, and he's really good at running the break. He's great in transition and filling those lanes. And, you know, Darvin Ham has talked a lot about their running principles and schemes and things like that. So I think he could fit in when it comes to those things. Pretty bouncy too. Wasn't necessarily expecting that. I think he could be a great lob threat again in transition. And I know that on Twitter you were like, oh, he's kind of like a Stanley Johnson. I was like, is it just because he wears a t-shirt like under like a really baggy white t-shirt under his jersey? But to be honest, like I thought the same thing. I was like, yo, this guy looks like Stanley Johnson. But I was like, I think it's just the attire. But actually, like, I think their physique as well. Like, yeah, like they're pretty, like really built, like big tree trunk, you know, type calves. But I think that he has, yeah, like a more polished, you know, offensive game, a little bit more reliable. So really liked Vince Williams Jr. I think he's at the top of my list, actually. Nice. So yeah, I won't talk too long about the other two guys, but Keon Ellis, it's everything that you said. He is really scrappy. And I think that he plays angles really well. He knows how to position his body, and he's really light on his feet. But the size could be a bit of an issue. Maybe he's got to get stronger, you know?
So initially he was like unofficially listed at 6'7". I was like, oh yeah, sign me up. And then he measured out in the combine as 6'3" without shoes. And I'm like, oh, that kind of dampens my excitement a little bit. But, you know, if you frame it in, well, what if you're getting the next Patrick Beverley? Then you're like, okay, that makes sense. But I'm just saying, if he was 2 inches taller, I think we would both be more excited and hyped. But yeah.
Yeah, no. I agree with you there. And yeah, I think that he's also like more of a playmaker. You know, he can create for himself. He can, you know, go off the dribble. He has a nice Euro step, actually. I feel like in college you don't see that from a ton of players, that type of development. And then Justin Lewis, you talked about him a little bit as well. Big dude. I do like the Grant Williams comp, but way more athletic. Like, he's actually really good in the dunker spot. I feel like he knows how to, like, fill space in the lane. And it's like guys get out of the way when he elevates. Yeah. So he's really strong. Yeah, I like his game too, but if I had to pick one guy that I'm rooting for, it's probably Vince Williams Jr. He's 21 years old, you said, so a little bit of an older dude, right? A little more experienced. Just, you know, not to follow the template of, okay, there's Alex Crusoe and, you know, there's Austin Reeves and whatever, but like, they are guys with more experience, right? That's a big reason why they're probably late second round or falling out of the draft altogether, but, we have this propensity, right, to like find guys like that, so. Kind of what Tommy said too, like, are we looking to build for the future or these guys who can contribute now? I mean, shit, like, we could watch these videos and be like, oh, I can totally see this dude, like, getting meaningful minutes. Like, hell, we don't know, right? But yeah, those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Justin Lewis has a little bit of James Johnson in there as well, in terms of the thick frame and athleticism. One guy I really like is Jabari Parker from Colorado, 19 years old, 6'8" with a 7-foot. Wait, what happened? Wait, what's going on?
No, because you said Jabari Parker, so it just...
Oh, shit, sorry, my bad. Okay, I always do this. I meant to say Jabari Walker. From
You're
Colorado.
Obsessed with Jabari Parker, fam. You always have been. You won't let him go.
This is not true. Do not listen to Tommy. Okay, I'm talking about Jabari Walker, Colorado, 19 years old, 6'8" with a 7-foot wingspan, 14.6 points, 9.4 rebounds, 0.7 steals, 0.7 blocks, 1.1 threes made per game, 34.6% from three. I don't know if this guy is the next poor man's OG Anunoby or the next Sekou Doumbouya. It could be anywhere in between. I just know that the dude is very physical and his advanced defensive instincts are elite. So I'm not talking about Jabari Parker. I'm talking about Jabari Walker. So
we also
keep him
need
in
to
mind.
Find you. We need to find you another comp for a bust wings, and so you don't have to say Sekou Doumbouya every single
sorry.
Time.
Sorry, I just latched onto Sekou's, and I'm so sorry, Sekou. You didn't even get a fair shot on this team. You probably would have fared very well this year if you had gotten a shot. But yes,
honestly.
So Jabari Walker is a guy that I like. Jabari, Keon, Justin, and Vince are actually guys who may be in the second round. Some other names to keep a lookout for who may be undrafted would be Gabe Brown out of Michigan State, 6'8" with a 7-foot wingspan. Tommy, how would you like a GP2 who had 3 more inches on him and a legit 3-point shot? Does that sound good to you?
That sounds fantastic.
Well, that's Gabe Brown. Maybe that's his highest upside. And then also keep a lookout for Julian Champagne? his brother Justin is on the Raptors. Julian Champagne, I'll say Champagne, from St. John's, 6'7" with a 6'10" wingspan. He kind of reminds me of Cody Martin and Caleb Martin, and kind of looks like Lonzo in his step back threes, and a little bit of Jason Tatum. And then also look out for Orlando Robinson, 21 years old, Fresno State, 7'4" wingspan. This guy's either Karl Anthony Towns or Brian Cook, so there's no in between. And nice. Then lastly,
or Sekou Doumbouya.
Lastly, Trevion Williams, 21 years old, Purdue, 6'10" with a 7'2" wingspan, 265 pounds. He is the best passer in this draft class. Jokic level like passes. He kind of reminds me of Boris Diaw / James Johnson molded together. Very nimble and agile on his feet despite being 265 pounds. You'll see him crossing people over with that big frame of his, and you can sort of see shades of Zion Williamson a little bit. Can't shoot, is more of a post player, but he's super unique. Okay, so that's pretty much it, but I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this next prospect's name up. To all my kababayan sa Pilipinas, huwag kayong mag-alala. It's time to talk about the one and only Kai Soto. 21 years old, straight out of the Philippines, 7'3" with a 7'5" wingspan, played in the G League Ignite with Jalen Green last year, but then withdrew to play in international play with the Philippines, but the pandemic kind of flipped that on its head, so he was kind of left in between. And then this last season, he decided to play professionally in the Australian League for the Adelaide 36ers. He only played 15 minutes per game, likely because he was only a 19-year-old, 20-year-old, playing amongst men. But in the 15 minutes, he averaged 7.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, but he did hit 5 of 13 from 3, very low sample size, but that's 38% from 3. Average 0.8 blocks a game, which is 2 blocks per 36-wise. So my whole thing with Kai Soto is I'm a little scared about the Filipino stanhood behind him as the first full-bred, full-born Filipino from the motherland, but you guys will like his nickname. It's a Kaiju. I mean, for that alone, you know, Kaiju is, you know, Japanese for, like, big monster, right, Alan, or something like that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, for that alone, I think the Lakers should give him a shot, or any team should give him a shot. But my whole deal with Kai is that, yes, he's overhyped. Yes, it's the Filipino contingent can be a little bit loud on him, and it's almost like Linsanity amplified. I'm a little worried about that. But guys like Taco Fall, Hashim Tabit, Simbular, the guy from India, get drafted all the time off pure basis that they're tall. And I feel like Kai actually has good touch, some passing skill, and a workable jump shot. So I think he more than deserves to, at the very least, be on some team's summer league. 7'3" kids with 7'5" wingspans don't come along very often, even if they're supremely raw. And Kai can be somewhat clunky and coordinated, and he definitely needs to build up his strength. But I think that can come with playing in the NBA and getting the training staff around him. And he's actually got skills. So maybe he's just a gangly, too frail flop like Scalabissier at the end of the day, or maybe like a Bol Bol. But I feel like you still take a shot with guys with that length and that size. Alan, have you seen a little bit of Kai at all?
No, I have not. I didn't have the chance to do a deep dive. Yeah.
That's okay. Tommy, what about you? I've been spamming your texts with Kai Soto propaganda. He does have a 9'5" standing reach, or 9'6" standing reach, which I think would have him second in this year's draft class behind Mark Williams. But what are your thoughts on Kai Soto and maybe just even being on some team's summer league or training camp?
Oh, yeah. I think he'll probably, anytime you're 7'2" with a 9'6" standing reach, you're going to get a look. I mean, this dude, you know, looks like probably a better prospect than that guy whose name I'm blanking on that the Celtics had floating around for a few years
Taco
ago,
Fall.
That giant guy.
Taco Fall.
Yeah. You know, like, when you're a 7'2", 232, like, he's got a good build that doesn't really seem, I mean, he seems agile. He seems like he's got traits you could at least work with. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him. It's just, you know, he's very, very much a project player. Yeah. So, you know, on a team that is already going to have a number of project players like us, just because of the nature of how our roster's being put together with the contracts that we have, like, I don't know that we could per se take a shot on somebody like this, but yeah. He seems like somebody should at least be giving him a shot to maybe take a G League spot next year.
For sure. And also, the kid is just a hard worker. You have to take into account the intangibles of his situation and his background, carrying a whole country on his back, trying to be the first Filipino to ever make it into the league. You know, that stuff can put a lot of pressure on a kid, but we'll learn soon enough whether he can rise to the occasion. But you just have to like the amount of hustle that goes behind someone who's trying to trailblaze like that from a country where it's not easy to do this sort of thing. So there's my part in propping up Kai Soto. I joke with Tommy that we should probably draft all the Asians/half-Asians. So Hyunjung Lee, the Korean dude out of Davidson who had the first 50-40-90 season in Davidson, even over Steph Curry, who never achieved that feat. So let's draft Hyunjung Lee.
Steph Curry sucks.
Draft Hyunjung Lee, the 6'7" sniper from Davidson. Draft Kai Soto from the Philippines. Draft Johnny Juzang from UCLA, who's half Vietnamese. And then also maybe Ron Harper Jr., who's half Filipino. Let's just Asian it up right there. Asians forever! Yeah! Okay.
Got rice.
I'm going to end it right there. Got rice.
cut front.
That's what they're going to be playing in the gym when they first introduce the players.
Some people definitely catch that who listen to this pod, no doubt.
I know, especially if you're millennial and you grew up in the early 2000s and are Asian American or were around a bunch of Asian Americans like Tommy was. So with that said, that'll do it for our draft thoughts. And the draft is coming up this week, this Thursday. So buckle up. Number 39th pick and number 48th pick for Minnesota. That's what we're staking our claim on. And with that said, Tommy, Alan, I will catch you guys later. Oh, can you guys say peace or something?
Peace.
Peace.
Laters.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.